All right, good morning, everybody. We're starting with Daf Lamed Amud Beis at the fifth parak. We're sponsored by Omo Construction and the Baumzers. Appreciate their sponsorship. Also, Bagel Munch in Zchus of Shmuel's granddaughter. So, Mazel Tov. Okay, we are on the beginning of the fifth parak. Lamed Amud Beis. Ein Omdim L'Hispalel Ela Mitoch Kovod Rosh. Mishnah says here that when you say tefillah, and tefillah means Shemona Esrei specifically throughout all of this. And so a lot of these halachos are going to pertain to tefillah, and they're specific to Shemona Esrei. In Omdim L'Hispalel Ela, when you stand for tefillah, it has to be mitoch, as the Mishnah says, kovod rosh. It has to be the right mindset. You have to have a kind of a serious state of mind. Chassidim HaRishonim, the Mishnah tells us that the earlier Chassidim, earlier than the Tanaim, I guess, or the early Tanaim, used to be Shoha Shah Achasim. They would give themselves a lot of time to be able to put themselves into the correct frame of mind, so that they should be in have the right Kavana, Lavim Shbashamayim. A lot of the Sfarim don't think that the words La'avim Shbashamayim belongs here. There's all a question about what Kavana means. So anyway, that's what it says over here, Asha Achas. Rabbeinu Yonah thinks that this literally means actually an hour by the clock, in the sense that it just doesn't mean just a minute or two, Asha, which sometimes Shah means. And we don't really do this exactly. The normal routine for us is that we don't ever start tefillah with tefillah. We always do things in advance. So we have a whole early part of a davening in for Shacharis, and for Mincha we have at least an Asherah, and for Maariv we have a Birchas Kriyas Shema normally. Anyway, but the point is that we need to be in the right frame of mind. The Gemara is going to discuss different alternative states of mind or frames of mind to be in. We'll see. And it says here in the Mishnah, it says, Afilo hamelech sheweil bishlomo lo yeshivenu. This kind of abruptly turns into a discussion about how when you're focused and paying attention to your tefillah, then you're supposed to not be distracted. But Afilo melech sheweil bishlomo lo yeshivenu. Even if the king walks over to you while you're saying your Shemona Esrei and greets you, lo yeshivenu, don't respond. Which is a funny rule, because obviously that's a dangerous move. And so the Gemara says, well, if it's dangerous, obviously we're not talking about that. We're talking about where it's not dangerous, just that it's very distracting. Lo yeshivenu, don't respond. Not allowed to be mafsik. Rabbeinu Yonah makes a comment here, I think, about how it means don't respond verbally, but other gestures would be allowed. And afilu nachash karuch ala kevo lo yafsik. Even if you see a snake coiling around your legs, lo yafsik. Don't mafsik. So what does it want you to do? If you're supposed to not be mafsik, what should you do? So obviously this is not a venomous snake or a dangerous snake we're talking about, just an ordinary snake and it's bothering you and it's interfering with you. Rabbeinu Yonah just makes a comment again saying that it means lo yafsik b'dibur, but if you want to kind of kick it away or walk over to another spot where there aren't any snakes, that's probably a smart move. I think that's very obvious from all of the other halachas that we saw on the previous two dafim, that if your kavana is being disturbed by something, so then it says that you can stay on the chamor. That's what we saw last time. In the interests of having good kavana, you're allowed to keep, you say your Shemona Esrei while walking, while being on the chamor, because otherwise the time pressure is going to be too much of a distraction. And so in the interests of being able to have peace of mind when you say your tefillah, you're allowed to compromise on even standing and even facing the right way. And so this halacha pretty obviously is saying that I'll tell you a common situation is that you daven, I don't know, maybe downstairs and you see bugs walking around. And if you don't care, you don't care. But if you start seeing a spider or a roach or something, and then it's walking over to you, and it's very distracting, and you keep looking at it, and you keep hoping it. So that's not the way you say Shemona Esrei, right? So you walk away. So that would be the, it seems, at least according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the right reaction to this. But don't talk. Gemara says, Minahani Mili. That what? That you have to be in the right frame of mind. How do we know you have to be in the right frame of mind for tefillah? Amar Rebbe Elazar, the Amar Krav, Vehi Maras Nafesh. So this, we're going to see a number of places over here where we're going to quote the Psukim of Chana, who was praying for a child. She didn't have any children, and she went up with her husband to Mishkan Shiloh and was praying, and it describes that whole scene. And so one of the descriptions is Vehi Maras Nafesh. Vehi Maras Nafesh. So she was very she was feeling very down. So I'm not sure exactly how that serves as the source for this din of Kovod Rosh. Mara says, anyway, that doesn't prove anything. Well, the truth is, she was in a particularly bad way. She was feeling so despondent about her childlessness, and that's not everybody's condition. And so you're not supposed to try to emulate that necessarily. The Gemara says, oh yeah, okay, so scratch that. That's not the mucker. Elo Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina Mehacha. V'ani Barov Chastacha Vobeisecha Shtecha El Heichel Kachcha. This is a well-known pasuk that we say in Matohu, I guess. It says here, that's this. This is a source. It says, Eshtachave, I guess that's the reference. Rashi says, Mitoch Yira. So you have to have Yira, which is a kind of an awe. And that may be the frame of mind that we're after here. The Gemara says, well, that doesn't prove anything either. Mimai, Dilma David Shaini, to have a Mitzar Nafshe Birachme Tuva. Well, maybe that's different. David HaMelech was different in it's the way he was. It says he was Mitzar Nafshe Birachme Tuva. He used to kind of inflict himself with so much tefillah. So he's also not a characteristic of regular people. He's not an exemplar of the regular person. So Ella Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Mehacha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi gives us the following pasuk: Yishtachavu LaHashem b'hadras kodesh. That's a familiar pasuk. Yishtachavu LaHashem b'hadras kodesh. This pasuk appears a few places in Kabbalah Shabbos when we say in Kabbalah Shabbos, and Tosus over here tells you we're talking about the one that's in Mizmor LeDavid, Havu LaHashem b'nei Elim, because that serves as a marker for other Shemona Esrei related things. Pasuk says Yishtachavu LaHashem Bahadras Kodesh, where do you see anything there? Because Al Tikrei Bahadras Kodesh, which refers to the splendor of the holiness of the place, I guess. Ela Bacharadas Kodesh. So that just requires two slight modifications to the word Hadras. You have to change the hey into a ches and reverse the letters Dalid Resh to Resh Dalid, and you get Bacharadas Kodesh. So the Gemara says, well, I don't know. Maybe what's compelling you to do that? Why can't it mean what it says? Mimai, Dilma, Liolam Emelach, Hadras Mamish. Maybe the intent of the pasuk here is Hadras Kodesh, the splendor, the glory, and that's telling me this other rule. Kihad Rabbi Yehuda is telling me this other rule that Rabbi Yehuda the Amora used to emphasize have a mitzayi nafshei the Hadar Matzli. He would first dress up before davening Shemona Esrei, before saying Tefillah. This, incidentally, does serve as a source for the attitude that when you're saying your Shemona Esrei, you should be well-dressed. Shouldn't be so schlumpy. So let's take it as a heeder to do that. Earlier, we already saw other Makoros about what the absolute minimum is for Shemona Esrei. And it is a little higher than for other things, for brachos generally. So over here it's saying, no, maybe you need to have heder when you say Shemona Esrei. That's why it's proper to wear a jacket, these kinds of things. As long as it looks good. Ella, the Gemara says, okay, well, we're still looking for a source here for the Mishnah's claim that say your tefillah mitoch kovod rosh. Ella, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Meihacha, Ivdu Vas Hashem B'yira V'gilu B'ra'ada. He has this other pasuk. Pasuk says, Ivdu es Hashem biyira v'gilu bira'ada. Well, you have to do avodas Hashem biyira. Have yira when you do your avodas Hashem. V'gilu bira'ada, and rejoice through ra'ada, is trembling. And that's it. That's taken as the source. So that's it. Ivdu es Hashem biyira v'gilu bira'ada. Now, Ivdu, Rashi just points out, this is one of the numerous places where we treat the word avoda and the concept of avodas Hashem as specifically referring to tefillah. So, Ivdu es Hashem means when you're mispalat to Hashem, beyira. Okay, once with that pasuk came up, Gilu bira'ada, let's explore that a bit here. The Gemara says, V'gilu bira'ada, my V'gilu bira'ada. What does that mean? Amar Rav, Ada bar Masna, Amar Rabba or Rav. B'malkam gila, sham tehei ra'ada. That in the place of rejoicing, you have to make sure to also maintain your ra'ada, your trembling, meaning your yiras shamayim. Make sure that you're keeping yiras shamayim even in the place of the celebration, of the rejoicing, of the partying. I guess it's trying to express the idea that you can't lose yourself and become abandoned in the festivities. Abaye, and it gives a couple of illustrative examples over here. Abaye have a Yosef Kami the Rabba Chazi the Habaka Barach Tuva. Abaye was sitting there in front of Rabba. That doesn't exactly give the context, but Rabba was kidding, was joking around. Chazi to have a Barach Tuva. He was joking around, was kidding around so much. And this bothered Abaye. Amar, Vigila Baradaksiv. Pasuk says v'gilu b'rada, that even that you have to maintain your yiras shamayim. I don't know exactly what the steer is between joking around or badach and ra'ada. So I don't know. But Abaye felt this was a steer. So he felt he was acting inappropriately by being too, I guess, jolly. Amar lei, so he responds back to him, ana tefillin menachna. He says, what are you talking about? I'm okay. I have my tefillin on. So what kind of a response is that? I have my tefillin on. So either, you can say different things. Different mefarshim over here go different ways on this, the tefillin. Either the tefillin is the source of the happiness, or it's the reverse, that the tefillin being on all the time automatically puts a kind of a limit to how much you're really going to forget yourself and be abandoned, and you're never going to actually reach that stage of lack of Yiras Shamayim, and therefore you're kind of protected by the tefillin. So presumably it means that if you have your tefillin on, go ahead and let yourself go. Something like that. Amar le, b'chol etzav yeh, what's the pasuk? Mosar? What do you have here with Nekudos? B'chol etzav yeh, Mosar? So what is he saying over here? Amar Lei says, "B'chal etzav yeh mosar." He says, "But still, I don't know what's that supposed to imply." Rashi, "Kishara mares atzmo etzav yeh lo schar." Still, you're supposed to try to look a little down. And he says, "Yeah, but I'm not tefillin menachna, but I have the tefillin on." So I guess that's same kind of a thing. Tefillin are making me happy, I guess. Anyway, Mar Bered de Ravina, Avad Hilula Libere. Mar Bered de Ravina. Wait, did I just miss something here? Yeah. I skipped that line. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's a different story. Different story. Rabbi Yirmiyah was Yosef Kami de Rabbi Zeira. Okay, a different story. Rabbi Yirmiyah was there with Rabbi Zeira and Chazi de have a Kabbat Achtuva. Same thing. He was getting around so much. Amar Lei, Bechaletzav Yeh Masner. A different pasuk expressing the same thing. That was it, right? And he gave him the same response. The tefillin answers that the objection. Mar bered de Ravina avet hilula liberei. Mar bered de Ravina, one of the Amoraim, was throwing a wedding for his son. I don't exactly know why the men were throwing the parties, but anyway. So here he was throwing the party for his son. And chazin el rabbanan de avim kabad chituva. And he was the host. So he was seeing that the guests, the Rabbanan, were kidding around too much. Have a kabad chituva. So that was bothering him a lot. So we're on the next daf. Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. So what did he do? I see kasa demokra bas arba meya zuze v'tavar kamayu. So he took a crystal goblet, glass, something, worth 400 zuz. Really expensive kind of a thing, and he smashes it, and that shocked everybody, and it sobered everybody up. the yeshiva, and everybody got shocked. A similar type of thing, and Ravashi's similar type of a thing. Avad Hilula LeBerei is also, we threw a wedding party. His son was getting married. Chazinu LeRabbanan Dehava Kabat Chituva, and he saw the guests were kidding around too much. And I guess the Chassan's friends. And I see Kasa Dezugisa Chivarta V'Tavar Kamayu. Same kind of a thing. He took a crystal goblet, and same thing, and smashes it, and then the Yatzivu, and everybody got shocked by that, and sobered up. So it's an interesting thing. Tosas over here makes the comment that this, of course, is very familiar to us, that that's a scene at weddings, is that at a wedding, you smash the glass. It has an opposite effect, almost, but the point of it is, and this is what Tosas makes the comment over here, is that this serves as the mucker for smashing a glass at a nisuin. And from what we saw here, it relates to only the concept of losing your yiras shemayim, that it's too much frivolity that tends to happen at weddings and miscellaneous other simchas, and so smashing the glass is what tempers the kidding around, the frivolity.
Has nothing to do with the
mishpacha. Interestingly, it does not necessarily seem to be related to the Churban and to the Meshkechei Yerushalayim. We relate it, and there might be some grounds to relate it. The Shulchan Aruch does relate it. The Shulchan Aruch does describe that you smash the glass as Zecher L'Churban. And there's more, a little bit more of that coming up. But this Tosfos doesn't say it that way. And of course, the irony is that we usually schedule things such that you smash the glass right as the band strikes up and does all the dancing. It's just kind of I don't know, it's an irony. But maybe it has some effect anyway. Maybe it's still supposed to try to remind everybody to keep the festivities under control. Problem is that these days nobody knows this unless they actually go and examine. They don't use an expensive crystal goblet. They use a light bulb. These days, the caterers think that the light bulb makes that little pop sound. It's easier to do it, and it makes noise and whatever. And I don't know. So whatever. I don't exactly know.
Change out the light bulb. I've seen it.
Yeah, you've seen people swap out because they don't think that if you're gonna already have the minigs, so then do it right.
Caterers spend 50 cents on a glass when you can spend 25 cents on a light bulb.
Exactly.
Glass cup for a dollar or so. Get from a dollar.
Light bulb's still cheap.
Oh, the caterers, right? The caterers get all these in bulk. Well, I don't know. No, it's more than that. It's that they think that also the glass sometimes is hard for him to smash, and sometimes he'll hurt his ankle, and so you know, it's the cheshbon is not a bad cheshbon. Just.
But by the way, I've seen in Hasidic weddings where they have a badchan staying on a chair on the middle of the you know, after the dancing and saying,
you know, he's putting on the routine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if he's too good, so then maybe it'll activate this this problem. All right. Anyway.
It looks like the concept of Kovid Rosh is more about being trembling and depressed than about what I thought, which is more being
Well, I hear what you're saying. I don't know. It could be that it's only compared to what's the alternative. So if people are too I don't know, kidding around, so then you pull it back to the center. But I don't know, this is not in tefillah. The tefillah thing is a specific rule with respect to Ovid Hashem in the middle of tefillah. This is just generally.
This would be equivalent today. Yeah. Equivalent today to everybody being on their cell phones during the chuppah.
Interesting. I don't know if the objections there are with respect to God. Those are the question of how does that... Okay. In any case, let's take a look. Amru le Rabbanu le Rav Hamnuna Zuti behilula de Mar Bered de Ravina. So they told some of the people there saw Rav Hamnuna Zuti was present at the wedding, of Marbury de Ravina's, I guess Marbury de Ravina's wedding, either the wedding, either his wedding or the wedding for his son, I don't know. And they said to him, hey, look, why don't you get up there and Lishri Lan Mar? Why don't you sing a song for us? I guess that was a reasonable request for him. And Amar Lahu, Vailan de Mislan, de Misnan, Vailan de Misnan. So what song did he sing? He sang a kind of a mournful song of oh, what was to us, we're going to die. So Amri Lay, Anan Mana Ani Basrach. What did that mean? Anan Mana Ani Basrach.
They say it's better to go to a funeral than to a...
Yeah, they make a comment like that, that you get more inspiration from the funeral than from the wedding because the funeral reminds you of your mortality and it'll be improving as opposed to the wedding. Yeah. So he's trying to, I mean, introduce a little funeralness to this wedding. Okay. Amalei ha'torva ha'mitzvah. He says, so they said to him, Anan, mana ani basrach. How do we react to this? I guess the Torah and the mitzvos protect us, so take inspiration from that. So it's not a bad thing to focus on mortality if you can also focus on what he considers to be the remedy, which is osek in a life of Torah mitzvos, because then I guess the concept is that then you live on through your children and the values that you inspire and that kind of thing. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This is Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Shimon the Tana. Asr li Adam sheyimal leischok piv bolam hazeh. Shneem mar az yimal leischok pinu l'shonein arina. So this is Rabbi Yochanan in the name of the Tana Rabbi Shimon saying that you're not allowed to fully fill your mouth with schok. But he said, it is, I think Olam Hazeh over here doesn't refer to, you know, this world. He's referring to this world of Churban, I think. Shenemar az yimalei schok pinu uloshonein arina. Eim asai bizman sheyomru bagoyim igdil Hashem la'asosim eila. Pasuk says, az yimalei schok pinu. At that time, we'll fill our mouths with schok. Uleshoneinu rina, and we'll fill, and our tongues will be saying song, rina. Emasai, when is that going to happen? Bizman sheyomer, the next pasuk, yomru bagoyim igdil Hashem la'asosim eila. When the goyim are going to recognize Hashem is, and his relationship with his people. So I guess that's the point, is that this line relates the Isser of Schok specifically to the Churban period, or maybe to Olam Hazeh as opposed to Azmana Geula Asida, maybe. Amar Olav al Rabbi Abay Shlakish, Miyamav, Lo Milei Schok Piv Olam Hazeh, Mikishama Mi Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi. So it says Reish Lakish, you know, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan had this funny relationship. They were relatives, and it was Rabbi Talmud, and then it was Chavrusas. So it says that Reish Lakish apparently must have been a kidder, and then when he heard Rabbi Yochanan say this, he took that to heart, and he changed his whole demeanor. Okay, two dots. Anyway, this, a lot of the post-game, the riff over here just goes on and on about that whole question about singing Bizman Hazeh, singing, playing music Bizman Hazeh, Zimra Bizman Hazeh. The whole thing is something that in our culture we don't seem to take that seriously. Tan Rabbanan, ain't omdim lispalel. Let me talk. So now we're back to tefillah. Okay, back to the rules of Shemona Esrei. Tan Rabbanan, ain't omdim lispalel. Ella, oh, let me talk. Din v'let me talk dvar halacha. Let me talk halacha psuka. When you're saying your Shemona Esrei, you shouldn't have in your mind a din, which means you shouldn't be in the middle of din, meaning of analyzing a halachic case. Let me talk dvar halacha, or a theoretical halachic analysis. Ela mitoch halacha psuka. It should just be a simple halacha, a simple halachic statement, halachic fact. Veichidami, such as what? Then the Gemara over here goes on to give you three very unsimple halachic facts. So here's what the Gemara gives as illustrations of simple halachos that are not going to be percolating in your head while you're saying your Shemona Esrei and thereby distracting you from focusing. It says here, let's see, Amar Abaye, Ki Hadar Rabbi Zeira. The Amar Rabbi Zeira, Benos Yisrael Lechmir Wal Atzman, Sha'afilu Roos, Tipas Dam Kechardel Yoshvo Saleha, Shiva Nikiyim. This is the guiding principle of how we observe the Hilchos Nida nowadays. And it says that Rabbi Zeira made a comment that Benos Yisrael Lechmir Wal Atzman, that Jewish women accepted upon themselves a practice which is not mandatory by Torah law nor by Chazal, but that it goes above and beyond. Namely, what? Afilu rovos kipas dam kechardal yoshev esalah shivanakiyim. Even if she'll see a drop of blood like a chardal, what's a chardal? A mustard seed. Yoshev esalah shivanakiyim. She'll insist on shivanakiyim. So the rule Minat Torah does not require such a thing. The rule requires it has to be a real re'iya, and it never requires shivanakiyim, just for a nidus. Nidus doesn't require shivanakiyim. So this is an expression of ziva. Well, ziva, you can never activate a ziva of shivanakiyim in one re'iya ever. So what's this all about? So this chumrah is not required by Torah law. The Chazal didn't even mandate this. The Chazal only mandated that if this is what's called Takanas Rebbe, is that you have to have Shiva Nakim if you have three Re'ios of Dam, even during Nidus. So that's itself a big Chumrah of the Chazal. But that's not this. This is one Re'iyah already needs Shiva Nakim. So that's a Chumrah. The question about the color of the blood here, a Chardel, is yellow really a Dam Tameh? It's really not Adam Tamei, so that's a little funny that this is given as an illustration. And and the question of the size, a re'iyah of kol shehu, it's true. As long as there's a re'iyah, like it's a hargasha, then even a little re'iyah of dam of a mashehu size would be enough to trigger these rules. But anyway, the point of the chumrah is that she has to, that the women keep shivin akiyim even for any re'iyah dam. And Rava Amar gives another example. So there normally, the way it goes is that farmers harvest the grain, and they harvesting the grain, I mean like this, they chop down the growing grain at the end of the growing season, and they leave it out there on the field for it to remain all summer long and kind of dry out, which I guess is better for the grain. And then, at the end of the season, they go out there, and they smash off the stalks from the husks, and then they thresh the grain by smashing the husks off of the kernels inside, and then they winnow and sieve, and they sift out all of the kernels from all of the chaff, and then when it's all very compact and dense and all of the stuff that you want is there, so then they'll fill up the sacks, and they bring that into the silos. That's the standard process. And that process, that sequence, apparently has to happen exactly in that way. Namely, that you first have to process the grain, and then you fill up the sacks, and then you bring it into the silos, into the storage rooms. And so what happens if you don't do it in that order? What happens if you bring the grain in the husks and everything into the storage area? And then once it's ready in storage area, when you get around to it, so then you'll thresh inside and you'll do all of that stuff there inside. So the rule is that whenever grain grows, whenever any produce grows in Israel, it's all tevel, it's all treif, until you mafresh chumas and maestros. But this is what it says here. But it's not true. If you did that sequence that I just described, which is the out of order sequence, so then the rule is this. Then you're allowed to eat that produce, achilas arai, not necessarily achilas kevel, though some Rishonim dispute that. But your behemos, you're allowed to feed your behemos that way. So this halacha is saying that for the purpose of your behemos, where they shouldn't have to, you know, you shouldn't have to worry so much about trumas and maestras for the animal food, then you're allowed to take the animal grain and deliberately lechatchila circumvent the halacha of trumas and maestros for the sake of feeding your behemoth. So that's an interesting statement. We're saying that not just that it's effective, but that you're allowed to do it. It's not necessarily recommended for regular people to do this, because then you're bypassing a mitzvah opportunity. So generally speaking, we don't want people to bypass mitzvah opportunities. So, you know, follow the regular procedures, and then you're going to have to give away some of your produce. Okay, so do that b'simcha, but don't try to get around it. But over here, we're being told that you can get around it l'chatchila for the sake of the behemoths. Okay, so that's another example. Oh, it's a pretty straightforward, simple halacha. Doesn't even require any thought at all. And if you just focused on that right before your Shemona Esrei, you'll be able to focus properly on the tefillos that you're saying, because your mind will be essentially clear and not preoccupied by contemplating that rule. And this is other very simple halacha. If you happen to have a behemoth kachim around a korban, and I don't know, it looks like it's not doing so well, so you bring the vet, and the vet recommends hakazas dam, bloodletting. So here you are, bloodletting from the behemoth of kachim. What's the rule? What's the status of the blood? It says here, well, the blood is hektish. Aser behana amol limbo. And Rabbanan avdi. Okay, so that's it. I'll start asking, how does this reconcile with all the other rules that we know about blood is not subject to me'ila? Why are we saying it is? So you're supposed to have already, you know, absorbed the answers to the question to the point where if you think about this halacha as a simple halacha and not even anything worth contemplating. Okay, in any case, that's a whole other concept. Just you realize that what we just said here about how you're supposed to be approaching Hashem in tefillah from a mind that was just kind of focused on a simple halacha, that's from this braisa, this Tan Rabbanan. That was a braisa. That's not what it says here in the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives a different attitude. So the Gemara says over here, the different Amorayim would actually follow different practices. It says here, Rabbanan avdi kemasnisin, Ravashi avid ke braisa, that the other Amorayim would follow the Mishnah. They wouldn't necessarily, you know, try to specifically focus on a halacha psuka. You try to give themselves COVID rosh. But Rav Ashi, he would just say a halacha psuka, and in that mind frame, that mindset, he would start Shmona Esrei. All right. Anyway, Tana Rabbanan. Ein omdim lispalel lamitoch atzvus lamitoch atzlus lamitoch schok lamitoch sicha lamitoch kalus rosh lamitoch dvar betalim elamitoch simcha shel mitzvah. What should you be doing right before you start Shmona Esrei? It says here, well, you shouldn't be atzev, you shouldn't be sad, shouldn't be atzel, shouldn't be kind of indolent. Lamitoch schok lamitoch sicha lamitoch. You shouldn't be engaged in any of these kinds of things, either these kinds of activities or these kinds of thoughts. You should have instead a simcha shel mitzvah, which is a whole different thing. It's a different concept. All right, anyway, that's what this braisa recommends. V'chein, and incidentally, lo yipater adam echave ro, lo mitoch sicha v'lo mitoch schok, lo mitoch kalis rosh. When you say goodbye to somebody, you know, don't say goodbye with a parting joke or with a parting, I don't know, sicha. Velomitoch kalus rosh, velomitoch dvar betalim, elomitoch dvar halacha, or others have a girsa, not dvar halacha, simcha shel mitzvah. It hinges on what we're going to prove, how we're going to prove it. Shekin matzina b'nevim harishonim shesimu divrayim b'divray shavach b'tanchumim. Because after all, the Nevi'im harishonim acted that way. In what way? Simu divrayim b'divray shavach b'tanchumim. Because they would give their messages to the people. That's their job as Nevi'im. But then they would try to, like, their final message would be, would try to be something consoling, comforting. somehow or other that's supposed to serve as a support for this claim that when you say goodbye to someone, to a friend, you should do so mitoch simcha shel mitzvah or dvar halacha or dvar Torah or something. Okay. Anyway, that's what it says. And then a similar kind of a sentiment here. It says v'chein tana mari bar berei derav huna berei derav yirmiya baraba said the following comment: al yiftar adam mechavi roa lomi ella mitoch dvar halacha shemitoch kach zoch reyu. When you say goodbye to somebody, say goodbye and share a dvar halacha, because that will stay fresh in mind somehow. The somehow might have to do with the fact that, well, then they'll tell that over, they'll tell that idea over to somebody else, mishmo, and so you'll always kind of have opportunities to refer to the other person by name. Kiyadir Rav Kahana, Alveila Rav Simi Barashi, Mipumna Harad, Beit Sinisa, De Bavel. So one time, I guess Rav Kahana was escorting Rav Simi Barashi from Pumnahara all the way to Beit Sinisa in Bavel. Not that I know anything about these relative these places. Kimata Lahasam, when he got there, and clearly he was going to, you know, turn back and go back and say goodbye. Amrle Mar Vaday de Amri Inchi Hani Tsanisa de Bavel Isnahum Yadam Harishan Viad Hashta. He tells him, wow, here we are in Beit Sinisa and Bavel. So he says, Hani Tsanisa de Bavel, Isnahum Yadam Harishon. You know, this little town here was a place where Adam Harishon was. Amrle Yad Kartan Milsa. Apparently that was a quip. That was a kind of a comment that he made, or not necessarily seriously. But then, that what? Okay, meaning the kanim are the palm trees. Well, kanim are just reeds near the river. So the kalim are palm trees. Yeah. So he's saying that these palm trees look like they're so old, they're from Adam HaRishon time. I don't have a comment like that. Nothing. Anyway, so then he says to him, Rav Simi Barashi says back to him, hey, that reminds me of something that I heard from Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Dom Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Mai Dechsiv Ba'aretz Asher Lo Avar Ba'ish V'lo Yashav Aram Sham. Pasuk refers to the some place that was never inhabited. So the wording, though, is Lo Yashav Adam Sham, where Adam never stayed there or dwelled there. Meaning a person. Meaning it's totally desolate. But they're interpreting, this is what Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says, Yashav. Obviously, in the pasuk gets a little bit funny. So Ala Lomar Lach Kal Eretz Shegazer Alav Adam Harishon LeYishav Nis Yashva. Chal Eretz Shelo Gazer Alav Adam Harishon LeYishav Lo Nis Yashva. He tells him that clearly that's a reference to the fact that Adam HaRishon kind of got to determine which parts of the world would be settled. Okay, there's some kind of a concept behind this idea, but whatever it is. Rav Mordechai Alvei L'Rav Simi Barashi Mi Hagronia Ve'ad Be'kipi V'yamrila Ad Be'dura, and then end of story. So presumably this is supposed to confirm that notion that when you're saying goodbye to somebody, say goodbye over some kind of a Torah thought. All right. Not that that was a Dvar Halacha, what he said about Adam HaRishon. But okay, anyway, two dots. Okay, here we go. Back to Tefillah rules. HaMispalel, Tzorech sheyechaven es libo l'shamayim. You need to have Kavana l'shamayim. So the concept, I think, is you're supposed to try to envision yourself actually praying in Shemayim. That's how the Rambam makes a comment like that. You're supposed to try to envision yourself as if you are in Hashem's office, so to speak, when you're addressing your tefillos to Hashem. Abba Shaul Omer, Simen L'davar, Tachin Libam, Takshiv Aznecha. Okay, Tachin Libam, this Tachin Libam means your lev. Lev always means mind. In all of these halachos, your lev is always your mind. Your mind has to be tachin. It has to be nachon. Nachon always means kavana. And, okay. Exactly what that means, how that relates to Shemayim, I don't know. Tanya. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Kachay minhago shel Rabbi Akiva k'shayim espalel lemat zibur. Rabbi Yehuda tells us that Rabbi Akiva used to have the following. Whenever he would pray with the tzibur, regular davening in shul, hayim katzer v'yolim epnei, torach hatzibur. He used to daven, you know, he would just keep his davening short. K'shayim espalel b'ino l'bein atzmo, but when he would be davening on his own, when he would pray on his own, he couldn't get the shul, then adam enicho b'zavizu, motza b'zavizacheres. You could leave him there and in one spot, and you'd find, you know, he finishes the Shemona Esrei totally in a different place. Chol kach lama, why? What would happen? Bipnei krios v'hishtach avoyos. Because his tefillah experience, I don't know, led him to do lots of bowing down and straightening up and bowing down, straightening up. And I don't know, I guess the concept is that he was so moved to responding this way, because he was able to get his mind into it as if he was like Bashamayim, and it's so overwhelmed that he kind of fall down in Ishtach Havaya. And as we all know, you bow down, you get up, you slide a little. You don't really exactly get up in exactly the same place where you lean down. All right, anyway, so that's what it says Rabbi Akiva would do. All right. But the point is, this is supposed to be an expression of having a lot of kavan, of envisioning in your head as if you really are in a genuine experience of an encounter with Hashem and expressing your tefillos. Amar Rabbi Barav liyolam yisparal adam b'vayis sheyesh b'chalo nos. Rabbi Barav says that when you say your tefillos, it's best if you can choose a room that has windows. Another way of saying that is if you're building a shul, put windows in. Shneamar. The cave and psichin lay, like the pasuk in Daniel says, the cave and psichin lay, that his windows would be open. So the context is that Daniel was the psukim are that Daniel used to pray every day. It says, and he got into trouble because of that prayer. In fact, that was what made him thrown into the lion's den, because he was a favorite of the melech, and there were a lot of people jealous of him. And when you read the story, all this is very explicit. And so then what was going on was that the people figured that they would have a way to bump off Daniel. And so they encouraged the melech to issue an edict that nobody is allowed to issue any requests of any entity other than the emperor. This is why it's described in the Pesukim anyway. And so Daniel apparently was didn't hear of that. And then he did what his usual practice was, which is he would throw open his windows, and he would, somewhat loudly, I suppose, pray. And so the spies were all after him, and then they considered that to be a violation of the king's orders. And, okay, in any case, that's this story. So he was thrown into the lion's den. So the pasuk describes that they were able to find him out because kevin psichela, because he would throw open the windows. So remember, back then, windows doesn't mean that they had glass in the windows. It means that it was a hole in the room. So if you had the windows closed, that means the shutters were closed. So then nobody outside could either see or hear what's going on. And if it's open, it means just the window's open. It's like there's a hole in the side. So the prayers would be audible. Anyway, Yachal Yisparal Adam Kol HaYom Kulo. So we're learning from Daniel, you know, you should have the windows open. That's what it says. Yachal Yisparal Adam Kol HaYom Kulo. What's the whole point of having the windows, incidentally? Is it supposed to be because you're supposed to look out the windows and see, and that's why he opened the windows? Could be. That's what they say. They quote a different pasuk. It says, "Su mara meinechem u'ur mibara eila." Lift your eyes to the sky and contemplate the creator of all of this. This scene. It's inspirational. And so in some shuls, they actually paint a sky scene over the Aron, exactly for this purpose, because in case you can't see, the sky should at least have the same type of an inspiration. So it says here, that's what Daniel is describing here. And then it says here, what else can you learn from the Daniel story? It says here, well, his regular practice involved praying three times a day. So Yachol, I might think, without any guidance, Yisbalel Adam Kol HaYom Kulo, maybe you should pray many times a day, all day. But no, it says here, no, Kvar Mefurish, Al Yidei Daniel, Vizimnin Telasa Vegomer. He would pray three times a day, which is kind of interesting, because talking about Daniel was pre-Bayis Sheni, which means that he was after the Bayis Rishon, he was in the Golas in between. So now the Gemara thinks, well, wait a minute, and maybe is that only because of the Churban, but not true during Bayis Rishon? Yachal Mishaba Legola Huchala. Maybe he only began that practice when he came to Golas. The Gemara says here, no, look at the Psukim. Kvar Ne'amar, Dehu Di hu avad min kadmus dina asher hu asa milifneze, which means that this was a practice that he already had, and presumably from the times of when he was living in Israel under Bayis Rishon, which is interesting. Then it says here, Yachol yispal adam lechol ruach sheyirtze tamid lomer neged Yerushalayim. So maybe you can pray in any direction that you want to face. And it says no, because Daniel used to face towards Yerushalayim when praying over here. Which is, of course, he's not an innovator of this. Or Gemara earlier, when we talked about the need to face Yerushalayim, quote a different pasuk of Shlomo HaMelech's speech when he built the Bayis Rishon. So when Shlomo HaMelech built the Bayis Rishon, he already was telling everybody when they pray, this is the location that you pray towards. So all Daniel was doing was just demonstrating that practice, rather than innovating that practice. Yachal Yehei Kololon Bevasa Chaskar Mforshal Yedei David. Can you say the three tefillos one after the other? No, because in Daniel, in the Tehillim, it says that the prayers were an evening one, a morning one, and an afternoon one. Of course, we have taken the... we're going to stop here because just as a long sequence of things that we're learning about the proper behavior during Shmona Esrei from these different places, different Mekoros in Tanakh. But we've already seen earlier the notion of the night, morning, and afternoon as being there's three relevant time periods for tefillah as it corresponds to the korbanos. But over here we're seeing, well, even independent of the korbanos, it's those are the suitable times for tefillah. All right, let's stop here.